To order at 1:11 p.m. I am joined at the table at this moment, and hopefully by more in a few moments, by Representative Rauscher, Representative Drummond, Representative Tallarico, Co-Chair Josephson, and myself, Representative Garantar. So please let the record reflect that we do have a quorum to do business, and Representative Parrish is joining us at the table now as well. Today we have one agenda item. We're going to be hearing House Bill 105 for the first time. Before we get started, we want to thank the folks from the LIO who are helping us, Ms. Tillinghast, who's been so great all week. Thank you so much. And I'm sorry I don't have our other individual's name in front of me, but thank you. We really appreciate your good work and help with our meetings. Representative Johnson is joining us right now. And so today what we're going to do, we have House Bill 105, which is the Gordon Haber, Wolf Special Management Area. We'll hear from the bill sponsor, Representative Josephson. There's invited testimony, and then we will open up for public testimony with time, if time allows. And so with that, we will go ahead and ask Representative Josephson to present his bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just give me one moment to gather myself here. Okay. Thank you for the opportunity to hear House Bill 105. This bill was the bill's intent, rather, was filed first in 2013. It did not receive a hearing. It was filed in 2015. It didn't receive a hearing in the 29th legislature. This bill aims to do something that used to be, or rather, it aims to return to something that used to be state policy, and that was to look out for the interests of wolf packs that leave the National Park and Preserve in Denali and venture to the north and east of the park. Now, when I say north, it's really the Stampede Trail. There are things there called wolf townships, but that is not the park. It's this odd configuration in a perfect rectangle that one of my invited testifiers can describe the history of. But it is state land, and the wolves are, as we know, very intelligent creatures, but not good. Well, in some respects, they're fantastic geographers, but they're not good at understanding borders. And what's happened, because they're not good at understanding borders, is that the population of wolves has dropped significantly. Now, there are still wolves in Denali. There are two packs in particular that Dr. Steiner will talk about in some length, or at some length, that are either decimated or gone, we believe, because of trapping. Significantly, the experience of the visitor going to Denali National Park, and we talk about that industry, reflects that where it used to be that nearly one in two or half of the visitors would see a wolf, it is now 6 in 100. So it's gone from about 45% to 6%. There are two reasons why I think this bill is important. One of them is an economic reason. The Denali National Park and Preserve is the third largest revenue-generating national park in the nation. It has 650,000 visitors per year. So this would be the equivalent nearly of every Alaskan going there once a year. Spent at Denali by visitors and in salary is about $810 million. That is, I think, a large amount of money. So there's a lot of money, and you know, I used to go up to Denali as a kid. There was one national park hotel inside the park boundaries. That, to my chagrin, was raised and removed, but one only needs to visit what I think is called Glitter Gulch, just north of the park entrance, and you can see all the commerce there. It's like a city of itself, particularly in the summertime. The viewing industry, the wildlife watching industry, is a big facet of our economy. An organization, and you have this given to you on basis, called Eco Northwest, reported that 90% of the people that come to Alaska come here to view rather than hunt wildlife. Now, I want to be clear, I'm delighted that others come to hunt wildlife. It's great. One of the reasons it's great is it helps sustain the wildlife. It helps give, in my view, to broaden the tent, make the tent bigger. I want a big tent. I want people who like wildlife for all sorts of reasons. But nonetheless, most people don't come here to take wildlife. They come here to take pictures of wildlife. The 19,000 statewide jobs involved in the tourism industry produce nearly $1 billion in wages. So let's review these numbers again. I said Denali, just Denali, generates spending and salaries of $810 million. Most of that is spending, right? These are people staying in the nice hotels there. I've stayed in a couple myself. But statewide, you have nearly $1 billion spent in the wildlife viewing industries. And I think it goes without saying, I think if this was a court of law, they would take it on faith without much evidence that going to Denali is usually, it's just right there on the punch list of things to do, with maybe a Prince William Sound visit, a Southeast visit. But it's, you know, people, we all know that if you come to Alaska and you return to the lower 48, they're generally going to say, did you go to Denali? And if your answer is no, I didn't go, that's not going to reflect well on you. It just doesn't. I mean, it's known. The Department of Fish and Game believes that, and has reported, and Dr. Steiner can get into this in greater detail, that there are just a handful of trappers who are lawfully exercising their rights in such a way that they are lawfully hurting the wolf pack and the viewing opportunities. Now, we may hear witnesses, we heard this in the previous bill, House Bill 40, that say, hey, this is the law. It is the law. I'm sitting here as Representative Josephson, waiting 4 years to have this bill heard, to say I want to change the law as to the areas just north and just east of the park. And mind you, this request is not radical. This was, and Dr. Steiner will tell you this in detail, this was the way it was traditionally, that the state of Alaska understood that there was some, I think, mud on our face for not participating in the protection of this species, even while it was on state land. And furthermore, I think there was some belief that there was an economic imperative. Now, I've talked a lot about the economics, but there are also ecological reasons to support an intact ecosystem in Denali National Park and preserve, even when that ecosystem ventures outside the borders. Now, the previous bill that you heard, House Bill 40, no doubt, and for the record, that is the 200-foot buffer on traps near trails, no doubt is a very ambitious bill. No one has known that and learned that more than myself. This is not as ambitious. The Department of Fish and Game reports that this is just, the best of their knowledge, this would just impact a handful of trappers. But those handfuls of trappers can make a lot of, in my view, adverse impact. Now, I talked about the concern I have with the public impression of this, and I don't mean to, I have a lot of friends who've worked at Fish and Game, they've retired from Fish and Game, they still work for Fish and Game, and as I said the other day, it's a great department. But I'd like to read, if I may, Madam Chair, for the record, what the national press says about this very issue. May I do that?
Yes.
All right.
Please continue.
I'm reading from the National Geographic, page 69, from just last year. And the edition is called, well, the article, rather, appears to just say Denali. So that's the topic. But the finer topic, it's the February 2016 edition, so this is exactly a year ago. And mind you, this is the centennial anniversary this month of our national park system. And here's what the author, whose name I can find, and before I leave, I will find it. It looks like it's Tom Clines, C-L-Y-N-E-S. Here's what he writes. He writes about a gentleman named Coke Wallace who bragged about shooting and trapping wolves. And here's what he writes. Quote, in 1999, Wallace shot a collared alpha female in the Grant Creek Pack, which had been highly visible to visitors on the park road. In 2005, he caught the East Fork Pack's alpha female in a trap set just outside the park boundary. In 2012, he dragged a horse carcass to a site where wolves were active and set traps and snares around it. When he returned a few days later, he trapped a pregnant female belonging to the East Fork Pack. The kill, documented by a neighbor and later confirmed by Wallace, landed him in the Los Angeles Times and generated both death threats and a boost for his guiding business. Now, as a parenthetically, I'm not sure who's threatening who here, but the article speaks to death threats. That same year, Wallace caught the only remaining breeding female in the Grant Creek Pack, which often roamed just outside the park boundary. The pack consequently produced no pups and fell from 15 members to 3 members. Wallace quipped, quote, that was the third time I ruined millions of people's Denali National Park viewing experience, close quote. Until a few years ago, a wolf that strayed near Wallace's turf would have been off limits. But Denali's most vulnerable wolf packs are at the center of some ugly politics. In 2000, Gordon Haber, and this bill would be named after Gordon Haber, a renowned wolf biologist who died tragically in a plane crash a number of years ago. In 2000, Gordon Haber, the celebrated and outspoken wolf biologist who continued Adolf Mary's research, observed trappers laying snares along the park's boundary. He joined with others and persuaded the Alaska Board of Game to establish a no-kill buffer zone along the Stampede Trail and in the Nanana Canyon. The Nanana Canyon is to the east of the park. So if you're right on the park's highway driving up to Fairbanks, it's right to your right. It's right to, your, to the east. After Haber died in a plane crash in late 2009, the Park Service requested an expansion of the protected area. The board responded by eliminating it completely, making wolves vulnerable to trapping and hunting all around the park boundary. Now, many of you may ask, isn't this up to the Board of Game? Well, so far, yes. But we have the authority to do whatever we want consistent with the Constitution in Title 16. And the Board of Game, as I indicated in my previous testimony on House Bill 40, is not a diverse board. It's not nearly a diverse board. And in fact, one could argue it's inconsistent with its Enabling Act because it lacks diversity. By the way, most recently, the Board of Game, when they last dealt with this issue, when proposed before it for a buffer, they not only declined, they said, we're not going to take this up for 6 years. Now, the history, and Dr. Steiner knows more about it in detail than I do, the history is that Commissioner Cotton did put an emergency order on, I think, the harvest for a few months, but that quickly expired. I want to cite just a few more things, and then I'll ask Ms. Rowe, my aide, to do a quick sectional, but it'll be fast because there's not many sections. But I did want to note a couple other things for the record. Fairbanks is a community that promotes itself on its trapping. We know this. Fairbanks, its borough, in a vote of 6-3, about 7 months ago, passed a resolution saying as follows, if I may read. I'll read just some of the whereas clauses. Whereas over 500,000 annual visitors from around the world come to Denali Park and Preserve, in large part to see the iconic wolves and bears of the park. And whereas both the park and commercial tour companies advertise Denali National Park and Preserve as the best place in the world to see wolves and in their natural habitat. And skipping down, whereas hunters and trappers are allowed to use bait in the 22-mile-long corridor, commonly referred to as the Wolf Townships or Stampede Trail Corridor, to lure bears and wolves out of Denali National Park and Preserve and kill them. Whereas the East Fork Pack, was the most famous, the most studied, and most viewed wolf pack in the world, and has now been decimated by hunters and trappers using bait to draw them just outside the park boundary. And finally, one other whereas clause. Whereas the Wolf Township's Stampede Trail was closed to when the Wolf Townships and Stampede Trail was closed to hunting. There were 140 wolves in Denali National Park and Preserve, and 49% of visitors saw the wolves. Now, the East Fork Pack has been almost wiped out, and the total number of wolves within Denali stands at 48, an all-time low. Now, we may hear some evidence that it's ticked up, but it's still much lower. And the number of visitors continuing, and the number of visitors who see wolves for the last 3 years is only 4%, an all-time low. Ladies and gentlemen, I find this an abomination, and I don't advertise to tourists who come here what our wildlife policy in this area is. But if asked as an honest individual, I'd have to say, if you didn't see wolves, the state is contributing to that, because we are. I'm not going to be dishonest about that. You have a number of documents on BASIS that reflect the impacts of trapping in the park. And a couple other stats, returning to the economic argument. I gave some of those stats, but here's another one. According to Eco Northwest, in 2011, wildlife viewing in Alaska supported over $2.7 billion in economic activity, while hunting in Alaska supported approximately $1.3 billion. Now, as an aside, I think both are important, as I said, but the one that generates the most is wildlife viewing. And I think that's very important. In a report from, just to clarify this point, in a report from the Department of Fish and Game in 2013, it reported that the average number of active trappers in the area in question is between 1 and 3 individuals in any given year. These are effective trappers. They're very good at what they do. And I would note one other thing. When I first ran for office in 2012, the Alaska Travel Industry Association sent me a questionnaire. They must have sent everyone the questionnaire. And I took careful note of the fact that they said, Candidate Josephson, how would you feel about having a non-consumptive seat on the Board of Game? Now, I'm very confident. The ATIA did not ask that because they were hoping I'd say, I don't want one. I don't think that was where they were going. But I think for reasons of their own, they have been reluctant to get involved in this debate. And I would submit, anecdotally, it has a lot to do with fear for their own funding. So those are the reasons why I brought this bill forward. I want to note a couple other things. I understand that there could be criticism and sensitivity about the fact that that this isn't in my neighborhood, it's in other representatives' neighborhood. We have a member here, we have a member of the other body who shares that border. But I didn't put the park there. I would have, if I were alive in 1917, I would have been glad to do it. And, you know, it occurred to me today as I was thinking about that sensitivity, that we all deal with this. Madam Co-Chair and myself have opposed a $20 million road through the heart of our larger district, my district specifically, that constituents don't want, but it was forced on them. So these things happen. It's not ideal, but they happen. Those are my comments, and I'd be happy to take any questions.
And Representative Josephson, before we do that, it might be helpful with the whereas clauses that you read from that resolution. What was the be it resolved?
Sorry.
clause, because
that's
that
obviously would.
That might be helpful to know where they, the borough came down there, if it was in support.
Thank you. And I thought about that, and then I stopped thinking. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the Fairbanks North Star Borough urges the governor, through the Commissioner of Fish and Game, to close the areas adjacent to Denali National Park and Preserve to the trapping and hunting of bears, wolves, and wolverines. Be it further resolved, copies of this resolution shall be distributed to Governor Walker and ADFNG Commissioner Sam Cotton.
Thank you.
Signed, August 25th, John Davies, presiding officer.
Thank you. Questions from committee members for the bill sponsor. Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Josephson, you stated that the Board of Game removed the buffer zone, and maybe you can provide some clarity. I may have misunderstood that. I thought the original buffer zone had actually been put in with a sunset clause, and I believe that that went away because they didn't reauthorize it. I think it actually sunsetted. I'm not sure they took an action to remove it.
I
think
I will,
it was sunset.
You might be right, but I think the impact is the same in that they've repeatedly been asked to reinstate it. But I'll ask Dr. Steiner, not now, but when he speaks, to take that question up. Through the chair.
A follow-up question, Representative Sullivan?
Just a follow-up. I mean, I can tell you, but you're probably aware of the distance between the closest North Star Borough boundary to the actual area where the buffer zone is proposed.
Mm-hmm.
It's reasonably substantial.
I'm sure it's at 120 miles probably. Or more.
Well, I think it's probably more like 78 or 79. Their closest boundary, I'm sorry, the closest boundary. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Rauscher.
Well, Madam Chair, how wide is this boundary?
Well, it's the entire proposed boundary is going to be several hundred thousand acres. It's in effect a conservation easement. So this management area would effectively say, go about your business per usual, but don't kill wolves in this area. As I understand this, if you were going to tell in the most elementary way what this does, that's what it does. But I'll ask Dr. Steiner to answer that as well when he comes online.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Vice Chair Westlake, and we're happy to see you back.
Thank you very much. And Representative Josephson, I understand, and I applaud your efforts out here. And if it's a sunset, I defer to our representative that lives out there. Now, just to play devil's advocate, I'm hearing there's this much money from viewing, because we absolutely do want that, and we don't want a black eye when folks are coming. And you give a figure for the trapping bringing in, and then we hear about the tourists, what they bring in. For me, and I've been 70 miles outside of there, it's places where it opens during tourist season, and as far as I know, once it's done, they pack up and leave the state. I'm not sure if that's the case in all of them. I just wanted to bring up that point because I do applaud your efforts, and thank you.
So, through the chair, I'm writing down, I think what I hear you saying, Vice Chair Westlake, is aren't these taken during the winter mostly when tourists generally aren't here? I think that's the essence of it. And I'll ask Dr. Steiner that as well, and we can get his credentials to speak on this issue. I think one answer occurs to me that even if that's true, they're not alive in June when the tourists come back. So that's part of the problem.
Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. Through the chair, I'm just taking a look at your bill here on page one. And first of all, I wish we had a map. I found something that looked like in Huffington Post, maybe they had a proposed boundary. I can't tell if that's exactly what yours is, but maybe we can compare that photo. But it says, if we go down to line 8, starting about midway through the line, it says, consists of the land and water presently owned by the state and the land and water acquired in the future by the state, lying within the boundaries of the parcel described in this subsection. So could you just maybe touch on the fact how you envision anything acquired by the state and how that would apply to the future acquired land?
Well, through the chair, Representative Johnson, we heard, I think the first day we had committee, that there's 5 million acres left to select. Of course, when it comes to the Stampede Trail, I think that's pretty clearly been selected. But there have been, and there are, they come up from time to time, there have been discussions of land trades, because this matter is so important to the tourism industry, and to those who want to see wolves. Now, let me make clear, a member of this committee and this legislature could say, well, if these things are under discussion, why are we involving ourselves with this? Well, because there's a crisis. We have two family packs that are gone. They were unique packs studied for decades by leading biologists. And I don't know when these things are going to be done, if ever. I mean, as I sit here now as someone who is sort of a student of the Board of Game's work, I mean, to the extent they're listening to this, they might say, wow, the legislature cares. I mean, they're not going to think that if I'm the only one involved. But there's no evidence I've seen that they're going to try to fix this.
Follow up, Representative Johnson, and then we'll have Representative Rauscher.
Well, I have to confess, even though I've been through the park, I've never been on a bus, I've never went into the park, so if I'm one of those persons that, you know, when they talked about, you know, not coming to the park, I've never went to the park to view it, but I have been up the Stampede Trail been up there. So I guess I'm, if that's the area we're talking about, there's a section also, if we look on page 2, mm-hmm. line 17, actually line 18, because I don't want to read the entire section. It says, the land and water, so on and so forth, is reserved from all uses incompatible with this primary function to protect wolves from hunting and trapping. So, and you can go on and read the rest of the paragraph, but I've been in that area, and I guess there's a lot of other animals, there's a lot of other game, there's a lot of other... I guess the other thought about this buffer is if its primary function is just to protect and have wolf habitat, I mean, I guess that's, would that be an unusual or first of its kind action we would take here?
Through the chair, Representative Johnson, I think your point is well taken. I think that that language could be crafted. Now, I want to be clear about something. Just because I'm agreeing that there's some language that could be sort of fixed or tightened up or clarified, it doesn't mean that I think my bill is a bad bill. I think my bill is a fantastic bill. But you're right that that language probably needs some clarification. Now, it is not what is, because what is proposed is not like McNeil, where that area really is uniquely dedicated to protecting their habitat. Now, I'll tell you something, though. I'm remembering attending a meeting before the Board of Game on McNeil, where it was an open question whether they were going to allow a hunt in McNeil. Everyone held their collective breaths. And it brings me back to my point that the Board of Game, only with the greatest reluctance, will consider non-consumptive concern.
Any additional follow-up? Representative Rauscher.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair. It says 116 wolves in 2006 and then 50, they're probably there about in 2014. Is there a current sustainable population number that has been given out scientifically or whatever, or derived scientifically by those that derive that, whether they be Fish and Game or Wildlife Commission or whatever?
That's a great question, and I don't know the answer. And so I'm once again writing down, I think I've forgotten to write one of them down, but hopefully Dr. Steiner, are you listening? Can you hear us?
Hello, I'm listening.
All right, so I'm going to ask you at the time you testified to take each one of these up. One was about the sunset, whether it was a sunset clause, one was about the width, one is about a sustainable population. I think there were one or two others.
Okay, I'd be glad to. If you could reiterate them, I was actually, my call was dropped for a few minutes, but I'm back on now.
Okay. All right.
And Representative Rauscher, Dr. Steiner is the part of the invited testimony, and so hopefully we'll be able to get a few more of those. I noticed that we do have an individual from Department of Fish and Game, and I don't know if you know if you want to defer any of those. Please let me know, Representative Josephson, and once you're okay. done, then we could bring that individual up
sure.
as well.
Sure.
Any other questions for the bill sponsor, Representative Johnson?
Yeah, I do. And looking through the fiscal notes, you know, I was just wondering if I don't know if you've had a if you could give an explanation of particularly the fiscal note from let's see one page well two page from I guess it's
conservation or mining land and
well it's the second one in here I'm trying to my second one let's see
Representative Johnson, at the top there's a component number, and that might.
Yeah, I'm looking. See, I'm looking. Here it is. Anyway,
I think you're in the 3002 component number. So it's the one prepared by
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
The,
yes. The component number 3002. Then. Okay. So, but the analysis of that. Is DNR indicating they don't really know what they're asked to do within the bill.
Mm-hmm.
It says if we need to do this part, it might cost this. If we're only to manage its existing authorities, so on. And then it says if the intent of the bill is to transfer responsibilities and authorities to the Department of Natural Resources, and so on. Could you just explain? I mean, could you just answer their questions? I guess for me, so I can understand how our fiscal note's going to look on this.
Well, I might need to, through the chair, Representative Johnson, I might need to ask Mr. Dale about that question. I think that, unless I'm wrong, which I've been before, a special management area might fall under DNR's auspices. A critical habitat area might fall under DFNG's, but and we might want to, at the time, if I feel that the body, this body, wants to hear more about this bill and we consider amendments, we might want to consider a critical habitat area instead of a special management area. But I read this, and all I read it as is DNR has twice said it's indeterminate. And that happens sometimes. So I think they need maybe more information before they can declare what it might cost.
A follow-up, Representative Johnson.
Thank you. I guess I'm not sure this bill's quite ready for prime time because I mean, without a fiscal note, it seems it's difficult to consider. And if Fish and Game doesn't know what they're supposed to do, I don't know how we can really consider the bill. In mind, I guess I would like to ask for as close as possible to a fiscal note on these questions.
Absolutely. And Representative Josephson, I'm sure, can provide that for us. And just as a comment, unfortunately, that sometimes happens with the fiscal notes, that they're indeterminate in cost. And, for example, even if they're doing their regular management activities, if there are some incidences that would require additional work, so perhaps, you know, someone would be illegally, doing an activity now in a protected area, that would actually require resources from the department, potentially, if there was some kind of criminal, you know, basically it'd be a criminal act, and that happened after that. So that has been a frustration of mine with the indeterminate fiscal notes. I'm sort of editorializing here, but just as a general thing, because we haven't had that really happen with bills, want to quickly make that comment. So Representative Johnson, and then we'll let Co-Chair Josephson respond to that.
Well, the last line on page 2 of the fiscal note analysis of the component number 3002 says, if the intent of the bill is to transfer responsibilities and authorities to the Department of Natural Resources, to so on and so forth, and that it says it does not have sufficient information. And I understand, and I thank you for that long explanation. It just seems like that they're unclear about the intent. And if they're unclear about the intent, I didn't know what the intent entirely was either.
Representative Joseph Sitt, and then we'll do your...
Thank you. I'm going to take, through the chair, Representative Johnson, your comment in the most generous way, because that's how I think you mean it. We had this drafted by our lawyers in the Terry Miller building. They're, like me, they're fallible. They're not perfect people. But your comment that it's not ready for prime time, just take note that I'm not empowered to draft fiscal notes. I don't know how to do them. I'm not allowed to do them. I have no authority to do them. Now, you may be right that they don't know what the intent of the bill is, and so we'll have to work on that.
Thank you. Representative Johnson, did you have a additional comment?
No, thank you very much. Appreciate that, Madam Chair.
Excellent. Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Just a follow-up to what I had originally asked. It talks about a trend, so if when you provide the information, maybe the trend also. And then I guess it all stems from my trying to understand if, because of the support information, are we providing a wildlife for tourism, or are we solving a wolf problem? And I'm just trying to get a clarity on that, because I'm kind of feeling both ways here on what I'm what being presented, and that's all. You see what I'm saying?
I do, and through the chair, Representative Rauscher, my answer is both things. I want an Alaska that has intact ecosystems. That's how I want to pass on Alaska to future generations. I think the born and unborn are entitled to see Alaska the way we see it. They are entitled to that. And I believe absolutely ardently in that. I don't want little pockets of Alaska like Yosemite and Glacier Park, great places, I'm sure, never been there. And so part of it is to have a sustainable, healthy wolf population, which correlates with income to the state. Because these sorts of stories from National Geographic won't be published, and we will have tourists who no longer 6 out of 100 times see wolves, but 45 times out of 100. And they will go back to their home states and their home countries. Many are from Europe. I see them in Denali all the time. And they'll report on the grandeur that they saw here. And they will brag on that. And people will come here and they'll spend lots of money.
Thank you.
Any follow-up? That was good. Vice Chair Westlake.
Thank you. And through the chair, I've noticed I'm here that Representative Johnson pointed out it's DNR that would be doing it. Is there a reason we're not going to be using Fish and Game to be doing this? And thank you.
Through the chair, very good question, Representative Westlake. I would, I just am in a guessing game to answer that, so I would have to... I'm told that my aide, Ms. Rowe, might know the answer.
Yeah. So the reason that Fish and Game...
Please put yourself on the record.
Hi, my name is Megan Rowe. I work for Representative Jefferson. The reason that Fish and Game is not involved in the bill as it is drafted now is because it's put under a chapter that involves what DNR does. And so if you look at the bill itself under subsection C on page 2, it says the land and water lying beneath the Gordon, Haber, Denali Wolf Special Management Area is assigned to the Department for Control, Development, and Maintenance. And so when we had that drafted, we thought the department was Fish and Game, and DNR has alerted us that that is actually their department. So in going forward, there could be options to put Fish and Game can control and DNR can manage, but that is a drafting issue that came up later in the game.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a few more here. I'm going to go Representative Parrish and Birch, and then we'll go back to Representative Johnson, because first time for those two. So Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, in 1992, there was a wolf buffer zone established, which was about a third larger than your proposal. Now, I've read that it was overturned for non-biologic reasons. I wonder, why is it that you're only aiming to establish a wolf buffer zone two-thirds the size of the amount previously suggested by the Board of Game?
Through the chair, Representative Parrish, I'm going to ask Dr. Steiner to explain why, in a map produced to you all, there is land to the southeast of the original park. So this would be, it looks like, about an hour to the south of Cantwell, near an hour on the park's highway to the south of Cantwell. There's a vast area there that the map in legend indicates 1992 wolf buffer established by Alaska Board of Game repealed the same year for non-biological reasons unrelated to its initial designation. Those who are experts on this problem, and we could have a, you know, put that in quotes because there may be a dispute about whether we have a problem. I respect that. But they've concluded that that area shown on the map that is on basis is no longer in need of the buffer. And I would say, incidentally, it suggests credibility on these folks. I look at that and I say, they're not asking for the full pie, they're asking for the part they think is important.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Birch.
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions. First off, Madam Chair, to the sponsor, have you contacted, or is there, I saw the North Star Borough, is the Denali Borough actually encompasses this area, and has there been any discussion or dialogue with the Denali Borough over, we've actually talked a lot about local control vis-a-vis trapping, and I guess I was wondering if you had any feedback or engagement with the Denali Borough.
Through the chair, Representative Birch, it's a very fine question, and the answer is no. I haven't heard yay or nay. It's something I can look into. I do know that there are citizens who live in what they call Denali. Representative Tallarico would know whether that's clearly a place, I guess. I don't know.
Healy. But Healy is the closest community, okay. And the Stampede Road. Okay. That's the Pangani Creek subdivision.
All right. Well, there are people that I know that applaud, that live essentially at the park entrance, that applaud what I'm trying to do here.
Well, if by way of follow-up, I would just encourage you to, we've had a lot of discussion about trapping and the importance of, we always talk about federal overreach, and actually I don't know if anybody around the table has actually been in this area, but I was in this area. In 1978, after President Carter invoked the Antiquities Act and basically moved off the table millions of acres of Alaska land, including a significant portion of this area, there's about 1,000 of us that basically marched down from Fairbanks and went in there and kind of, staked our flag and asserted our independence and our ability to assert our Alaskan interests here. And one of the concerns I have, particularly as we talk about trapping and wolves and so forth, this is the second wildlife-related bill that we've seen. My concern is that we're forgetting the local government. I mean, we have local governments in this state, and I would certainly encourage a sponsor to have that communication and dialogue with the local government in that area. And I do have concerns about, overstepping our bounds as it results in, stepping, ignoring or stepping aside the local community. Thank you.
Thank you. Through the chair, Representative Burt, that's a good point. It's a fair point. I would note, though, that the Board of Game is, unless checked by the legislature, which it basically never is, or the public, which generally fails, unless they're consumptive uses, has what I would call plenary power. It's absolute. If they do something procedurally wrong, they can be sued, and sometimes successfully. But I'm not so sure that the Board of Game, I want to be fair, I don't doubt that they take into consideration local interests, but as I said, their power is plenary. They run the show, and only the legislature can intervene. In fact, we've seen repeatedly in the press how local regional advisory councils have thrown up their arms because they've recommended A, B, and C to the Board of Game and been roundly rejected. So even the local concerns are, they're, according to these regional citizens advisory councils, are ignored.
Follow-up? Nope. Representative Johnson.
Just one more thing. I first of all, I do want you to understand that I appreciate the concern for the wolf pack because, I mean, I think they are they're much studied treasure, right, for our state. And so I just want to say that. But my concern is we continue to overlay things onto the park. When I was a kid, the park boundaries were much smaller, and then there was the expansion of the park boundary, and now we're talking about. And I know it was there, now it wasn't, and then maybe again, but we're talking about expanding this boundary again. And like you said, animals don't understand how to stay inside their fences. And so I guess my question is how much is enough?
Through the chair, just to clarify, we're not going to extend any boundary. We are going to grant, if this becomes law, and I don't harbor any illusions that is going to happen anytime soon, but we are going to grant an easement for the benefit of the wolves in this area. But I do want to clarify something that I've come to know that I didn't understand, certainly in my 20s, and that is Anilka is unique in that part of the settlement terms in vast parts of the 104 million acres allowed for existing uses to continue, subsistence, sport hunting, local practice, so that anyone who goes within the national park itself knows they can't drop a cigarette butt there without being reprimanded or even fined, maybe. But that is just a sliver the size of Massachusetts. Granted, that's big, but that's the original 1917 boundary. The rest of it, park and preserves, there's bear hunting, there is subsistence hunting. It is regulated and it's federal, but it's not. There are lots of allowed activities.
Follow-up, Representative Johnson. I guess we'll announce because Representative Rauscher's phone went off the other day. He followed through on his duties to bring donuts, so help yourself. Another question from Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And if I could refer back to the bill that Representative Johnson had pointed out. On the first page on line 8, it talks about the World Special Management Area. It consists of land and water presently owned by the state, and the land and water acquired in the future by the state lying within the boundaries. So I don't want to misinterpret this. That would mean, and you can probably help me out, Representative Johnson, and that would mean any private property that's encompassed within here would not have, be part of the management area. Is that correct?
I feel like saying an answer because, boy, wouldn't that be great to say an answer? I don't know. It's a very good question. I'm not sure that I know. There are private end holdings in this area for sure. But I would say that it is basic police power, which is health, welfare, safety, when we use the term police power, that the government can say, and this is well-known common law doctrine, that it can preclude some activities on private land. I mean, it can do that. So I think that requires some further discussion for sure.
And did you have a follow-up?
I did, Madam Chair. Thank you. Well, I think that's important to check the land status and also to know if the largest contiguous piece of Alaska Railroad-owned property would be considered part of that as well. There's a 6,000-acre reserve within the boundaries of the map that I think lies within there. That property is actually held in quiet title, a fair portion of it by a lease, and is residential property, the Tri-Valley subdivision. So there's actually a substantial amount of private property, railroad property, university property, municipal-owned land in there. And I just, the way I read it, this would only apply to the state, so that's just another question.
That's a great question. I appreciate it.
I do have another question, Madam Chair.
Sure. Follow-up, Representative Calabrese.
Thank you very much. According to the map, there's a reasonably large piece encompassed on the east side of the Nenana River. Mm-hmm. And maybe we can find out in the future from Fish and Game if the Totatlanica wolf pack is actually on the east side of the Nenana River. I believe it's reasonably healthy. At least my count this fall was 27 that I saw. I'm sure that pack is about to split. And then I do believe there are wolves up Healy Creek as well. There may be some up Dora Creek. So there are some thriving, in my opinion, I'm not a biologist, but there are some thriving wolf packs on the east side of the Nenana River that are, that really is their range. So Fish and Game is probably, I'm sure they're aware of those, but I would appreciate that information.
Sure.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Absolutely. And on that original question, I noticed Ms. Rowe looked like you might have something. Did you want to respond?
No.
Okay. Any other questions for the bill sponsor?
If I may, Madam Chair, I think we've sort of covered most of the sections, and we might want to go into invited testimony. We'll leave that up to you.
That sounds fine to me, unless there's anyone from the committee that would like to look at the, since it's just a couple sections. Okay. Okay, thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And we have, from the department, Dale. Thank you. Mr. Dale, if you could please join us at the table, and I think just the opportunity, if any members have a question for you, that would be helpful. And then we'll go into our invited testimony. Thank you, Mr. Dale. Please state your name and be available for questions when we have them. Anyone have a question for Mr. Dale? Representative Tallarico.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, Mr. Dale, you heard my last question. It's probably impossible for you to ask unless you just had recent information. But I know at least I refer to them as the Totatlanica wolf pack on the east side of the Nenana River. And I've had personal experience actually seeing them right down to the river. Do you have any information on those wolves on that side over there? And I believe it's GMU 20A, or excuse me, Game Management Unit 20A.
Representative Tallarico, through the chair. Bruce Dale, the Director of Wildlife Conservation for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. I can't speak to pack sizes in that area at this time. In the late 90s, I could tell you. But I can speak general that wolf densities are higher in 20A than they are in Denali National Park. And so many of the wolves along the boundary are, some are from the park, some are from, live more in the park, some live more, but densities are higher for wolves that are in 20A because the abundance of moose is higher.
Follow-up, Representative Tallarico?
Oh, no, thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Any other questions from committee members? Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd actually like to follow up on another one of Representative Tallarico's earlier questions regarding the Gordon Haber Denali Wolf Special Management Area, this is page 19A, line 8, consists of the land and water presently owned by the state and the land and water acquired in the future by the state, lying within the boundaries of the parcel described in this subsection. And then on the second page, subsection B, line 17, says the land and water lying within the Gordon Haber Denali Wolf Special Management Area. If you were tasked with enforcing this, and I don't think you will be, but if you were, would you interpret that to include private property falling within the boundaries?
Rep. Parrish, through the chair.
the Department of Public Safety would be the primary enforcement body in this situation, so I can't speak for them on it. And it depends on how it's implemented, whether it would be close to taking of wolves on private land or not.
Ms. Rowe?
Follow up, Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Rowe, it looks like you have something to add.
So on this point, my name is Megan Rowe. The first sentence that you're referring to, the Gordon Haber Denali Wolf Special Management Area consists of the land that is owned by the state, now and in the future. This says the land that is within that area. So the area is the area that's presently owned by the state. What is reserved is that area. The land descriptions might include private areas, but the Gordon, or private lands and waters, but the area that is the Gordon Haber Denali Wolf Special Management Area is land that is presently owned by the state, or will in the future be owned by the state. So it's not to include private land. I don't think that second section confuses that.
And another follow-up, Representative Parrish.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So to put in the simplest terms, private land within that outlined territory would not, in your interpretation, be subject to these rules?
Yeah, through the chair, yes.
Thank you.
Other questions for Mr. Dale? Okay, thank you, Mr. Dale. If you could please just stay close in case we need you for a lifeline or something. We're going to go ahead and go to our invited testimony. I'd like to invite Dr. Rick Steiner, please, to be the first invited testimony. Sounds like, Dr. Steiner, you were on the call, listening in for part of it, and perhaps give your testimony first, and then in questions, there were a few things that came up that the bill sponsor thought you would be an appropriate individual to respond. So thank you for joining us.
Madam Chair, Representative Josephson, and members of the committee, thank you. I do appreciate the opportunity to provide comments in support of HB 105, and I look forward to any questions you all may have afterwards, given the conversation that's just ensued, which has been very good and informative. I'm not exactly sure whether I should go through my prepared testimony or just be available to answer the many, many questions the committee seems to have. But regardless, let me just highlight some of the high points of my written testimony, which I have submitted along with 10 supportive documents to the committee. I hope you all have those. For the record, I'm a conservation biologist in Anchorage, and I was a professor with the University of Alaska from 1980 till 2010, stationed first in Kotzebue with responsibilities for the Arctic Coast, Cordova, for about 14 years, and then Anchorage. As legislators, you all face many difficult decisions this session. I feel for you. We have great hope for you. But HB 105 is really not one of them in our view. This bill should be an easy and unanimous yes. And I would suggest that there are two simple criteria with which to decide this bill and perhaps others as well. Number one, does it hurt or help the Alaska economy? And regarding HB 105, it's an overwhelming economic positive, no question about it. And in these challenging times, economic times of the state, we need to do everything possible to support the Alaska economy, one of the easiest and most cost-effective measures lawmakers can take to enhance the economy is to do everything possible to enhance wildlife tourism industry, which, as Representative Josephson mentioned, is a $2.7 billion a year industry in Alaska. I'll elaborate on that more if we need. The second criteria with which to judge this and perhaps other goals is, does it support or violate the state constitution? In particular, the principle of equity, fairness, and common ownership of all resources, including wildlife, by all Alaskans, embodied in Article 8, Sections 2 and 3. Let me just read those very quickly to remind all of us what they require. Section 2, Article 8, reads, General Authority, the legislature shall provide for the utilization, development, and conservation of all natural resources belonging to the state, including land and waters, and here's the key phrase, for the maximum benefit of its people. Section 3, common use, reads, wherever occurring in their natural state, fish, wildlife, and waters are reserved to the people for common use. So maximum benefit of the state's people and reserved for the people for common use amongst all of us. And so all of us have equal legal access to and use of the wildlife of Denali, including the 70,000 or so Alaskans who visit the park each year wanting to see these animals alive, as contrasted to the two or three individuals locally who hunt and trap these very same animals along the boundary. The balance there is pretty clear. Approving this bill is a clear constitutional choice and a clear economic choice. It's indeed, to many of us, the only rational choice you can make. And I can't imagine how anyone may wish to vote no on this bill can reconcile that position with these two criteria, the need to support the state's economy and the state constitution. And the other issue, of course, that Representative Josephson mentioned is that later this month, February 26th, is the centennial of Denali National Park, one of our iconic tourism destinations. So it would be a good time to resolve this century-old problem. And on that, if I could touch on a little bit of the history in the written testimony I've submitted, is a little bit more detailed history of the park, and particularly this issue along the northeast boundary of the park. But it's clear that when this park was first created in 1917, the exact boundaries necessary to protect park wildlife were unclear, and they were debated. And in particular, the lands northeast of the original park boundary, where the park wildlife migrates seasonally, were considered by many to need park protection as well. And subsequently, there have been many, many unsuccessful attempts to add those lands into the park to protect park wildlife. In 1922, the Alaska Railroad recommended it. In 1965, the state selected these lands, although it said that the park boundary was indeed an arbitrary line. That's very true. It is. 1969, the Johnson administration tried. 1978, the Carter administration tried unsuccessfully. 1980, ANILCA, please take a look at my submitted written testimony in the Senate report language, particularly the second one, the second phrase that reads, in the northeast, it was in the original House version of ANILCA that was pulled out in the Senate as a compromise, the Wolf Townships area, so they were not going to be a part of the park additions. But it reads, in the northeast portion of the area near the existing headquarters, there are some three townships and state lands which are critical for sheep, caribou, and wolf habitat and should eventually become a part of the park. The committee recognizes that these areas are important to the park and recommends that the Secretary of Interior seek land exchanges with the state of Alaska that would serve to bring these areas into the park. In 1985, the Sheffield administration tried to work an exchange with the Kantishna district, but that didn't work. 1992, I think one of the representatives earlier mentioned this, the Board of Game established the first wolf buffer, which is approximately 800 square miles, including the wolf townships and the entire eastern boundary of the park. And let me just mention right now, the reason this HB 105 asks for a smaller area is because it's focused specifically on viewability of wolf family groups along the park road. That southeastern area, south of the Alaska Range, is not as critical to viewability of wolves along the park roads. That's, I think, the justification for why that southern area wasn't really necessary to add in. But then, of course, the board rescinded that buffer just 2 months later, in political retaliation in response to Governor Hickel's suspension of some wolf control programs elsewhere. In 1995, the Murkowski administration proposed a rail line through the wolf townships. That didn't happen. In 2000, the Board of Game reestablished a small wolf buffer and expanded it in 2002. 2001, the Knowles administration proposed to convey the townships to the university, who would then sell the lands to the park. The legislature did not approve that proposal. In 2008, Dr. Haber, who's the namesake on the bill, and I proposed to the Fish and Game Commissioner an expanded buffer using emergency order authority. That was denied. And, of course, in 2009, Dr. Haber died in a plane crash tracking wolves in the park. In 2010, this thing went completely off the rails regarding wolf protection. Four Alaska groups independently proposed to the Board of Game that it expand that existing wolf buffer. And instead, the board not only eliminated the existing buffer altogether, but adopted a legally questionable moratorium on considering any further Denali buffer proposals for 6 years. And ever since then, there's been a contentious issue. A number of us have filed three emergency petitions with the Board of Game to reestablish a buffer. All were denied. And, you know, it's become obvious to many people observing and interacting with the Board of Game process that it cannot and will not provide a durable, lasting solution for the Denali watchable wildlife issue. Proposals are generally insufficient and of too small of an area. The board is ideologically opposed to protecting the economic values of watchable wildlife and parks. And most significantly, perhaps, as we've learned, even if the board were to enact a legitimate closed area, the closure wouldn't be permanent and could easily be rescinded by subsequent board action, precisely as was the case in 1992. So over the 100-year history of the park, none of these efforts have been successful at protecting wildlife in this sliver of land along the northeast boundary of the park, which is why we need House Bill 105 to at least partially do so for wolves. The Denali wildlife viewing decline is a matter of record. Today, of course, against the wishes of many Alaskans at least, the state continues to permit hunting and trapping of Denali wildlife along the northeastern park boundary. And while the lethal take, and this is very significant, I think, is relatively limited, I asked Fish and Game, I think Mr. Dale provided these numbers a year or two ago, for a rough total of the number of bears, wolves, lynx, wolverines, et cetera, taken along the boundary, and it was a relatively limited number, a total of maybe 25 a year, 4 to 5 wolves a year taken. But these are extremely significant individuals, particularly if they're alpha breeding individuals in a family group. I'll get to that in a sec. Just since the buffer was eliminated in 2010, park visitor viewing success for wolves has plummeted from 45% to only 5% and has remained at that level for the past 4 years. You have in your packets the National Park Service table on viewing success in the park over the last, since 2010. That translates into approximately 250,000 visitors per year being deprived the opportunity to view wolves in the park just by that simple elimination of the buffer. And that's the primary cause. The science is crystal clear. The studies by the Park Service and others have confirmed that the take of Denali wolves along the boundary has reduced the park population, has reduced denning near the park road, and reduced visitor viewing success. In your packet is two National Park Service peer-reviewed studies that I would encourage you to have a look at. And what's the old saying, that we're all entitled to our own opinion, but not our own facts? These are the facts, but these are not alternative facts, and I would encourage all of us to remain faithful to the factual science of the issue here. While there's only 4 to 5 wolves taken along the boundary, this is so significant because of an effect called the breeder loss effect. One of the papers you have from the Park Service discusses this, and it simply is that if a significant breeding individual is killed along the boundary, for instance, the loss can cause a cascade of losses and disintegration of the family group. This happened with the Grant Creek family group in 2012 when the last pregnant female was trapped along the boundary, leading to the disintegration of the family group from 15 to only 3 wolves just that year. And just that year, because of the take of that one pregnant female from the Grant Creek group and their failure to den and pup and disperse, viewing success in the park dropped from 21% to only 12%. due to the take of that one wolf. And that's the significance of just one of these significant breeding animals being taken in the boundary. It's also the breeder loss effect occurred again in 2015 and 2016 with the East Fork, also known as the Toklat family group. In 2015, an out-of-state hunter at a bear bait station just outside of the park shot the pregnant female of the group that year, so they failed to den, they failed to pop, they dispersed, and declined again from 15 to only two last winter. In May of last year, the sole remaining East Fork male, which was color designation GN1508 from the Park Service, was also shot by a hunter, also at a bear bait station in Stampede, leaving one female survivor of this long-studied, 70-year-long-studied Denali wolf family group. The surviving female dens had two pups that all have since disappeared and are presumed dead. So, we believe this long-studied wolf family group, one of the longest-studied mammal groups in scientific history, is now almost certainly gone due to the hunting take of two breed members along the park boundary. And that, to many of us in the scientific community, and I think the conservation community alike, is an unnecessary and unfortunate loss to science. A couple of quick things about the economic value of wildlife viewing. We've mentioned that one of the primary reasons visitors come to Alaska is to view wildlife. The 2011 study that Representative Josephson cited pointed to about $2.7 billion in economic activity generated by wildlife viewing. That's a sustainable and growable industry for the state. For the many Alaska visitors who really don't venture from the road system, Denali is really the best chance to view wildlife. And the studies confirm that a majority of Denali visitors cite wildlife viewing as the main purpose of their trip, and that viewing large carnivores, wolves and grizzly bears primarily, is a main indicator of a satisfying visitor experience to the park. So, put simply, the economic value of Denali wildlife alive, the Denali wildlife viewing, is enormous, orders of magnitude greater than the economic value of hunting and trapping these same park animals along the boundary. You've heard some of the numbers of visitation. Again, it's important to recognize that 70,000 Alaska citizens visits to Denali National Park last year were from Alaskans. That's a pretty substantial number of Alaskans. Visitor spending in the park, surrounding the park, was estimated at over $500 million. Denali is the fourth largest revenue-generating national park in the nation, exceeded only by Blue Ridge Parkway, Smoky Mountains, and Grand Canyon. And a great deal of this revenue comes into Anchorage as well. It's not just the Denali gateway communities. It comes through Fairbanks, and it comes through Anchorage. So these, you know, rebuilding and restoring and enhancing and sustaining the Denali watchable wildlife resource is an important economic choice for Anchorage and Fairbanks, as well as local gateway communities. An interesting comparison I'll give you, it's in the written testimony as well, is that at Yellowstone, with an average visitor viewing success for wolves at somewhere between 45% to 85%, the value of wolf viewing alone has been estimated about $35 million per year. And strangely, some Alaskans who want to view wolves in the wild now go to Yellowstone and not Denali. That, to me, is an embarrassment as an Alaskan, and it's really easy to imagine the potential value of restoring wolf viewing at Denali to those kinds of levels. Denali, this bill proposes a no-wolf harvest area. I truly believe it should be all lands within the inscribed boundaries, not just state lands, as it is much more complicated for enforcement purposes to enforce precisely where an animal is taken. The original buffers were all lands within boundaries. They were not just state lands. So that would be my recommendation on that issue. And to commemorate this month's centennial of Denali, a lot of us have asked Governor Walker to establish a permanent Denali Wildlife Conservation Area. along the northeast boundary that would remain open for take of ungulates and small game as it is currently permitted, that would prohibit take of park predator species, bears, wolves, wolverine, lynx, things that are high value, watchable wildlife resource for the park. There's an argument we often hear that isn't 6 million acres enough. I think it was the title of that National Geographic article. And it's answered simply by the fact that actually only 2 million acres of Denali approximately is closed to hunting and trapping, and that's the core wilderness area, which was the original McKinley Park. The additional 4 million acres is open to subsistence and sport hunting and trapping, as provided by ANILCA. And the few hunters and trappers that would be displaced by this bill from wolf take within the boundaries would retain access to millions of acres of state and federal land north, east, and south of the area. And the 7,000 Alaskans and the other 600,000+ out-of-state tourists visiting the park each year wanting to see these animals alive would benefit tremendously. This is sort of a rational reallocation of the five or so wolves that are killed along the boundary each year by a few individuals, remaining alive as watchable wildlife for hundreds of thousands of paying visitors. I think the choice could not be more clear. And then finally, public support for this is vast and extensive, both within Alaska, nationally, and even globally. There have been thousands of emails and other communications sent to the governor, the Department of Fish and Game Commissioner, in support of permanent protection of Denali wildlife along the boundary. Many tourism organizations, we understand, support a Denali wildlife buffer. A brief correction I had in my submitted written testimony, the ATIA supports the bill and the buffer, the wolf buffer. Technically, ATIA has no organizational position on the issue, but they have related that several of their individual members support the notion. An online citizen petition in support of the issue has now over 330,000 signatures, a third of a million, from over 100 countries in the world, all U.S. states, and many from Alaska. I put the link in the written testimony submitted. And last August, the Fairbanks North Star Borough adopted the resolution that Representative Josephson read elements of, and it's also in your packet. So put in summation, Denali's watchable wildlife is clearly one of the most important tourism assets in Alaska. And the economic benefit of protecting park wildlife on state lands east of the park is overwhelming and clear. Many of us hope the legislature will rise to this historic opportunity and give Alaskans, Americans, and the world, frankly, a long overdue birthday present for Denali's centennial by passing HB 105. Again, I think it should be one of the easiest decisions you have to make this session. So thanks for your consideration and your indulgence, and I would be delighted to answer any questions the committee may have. Oh, I would also like to offer my oral support right now for HB 40 that was heard on Monday, the 200-foot trapping setbacks along public trails. So with that, I will close.
Thank you, Dr. Steiner. It's very clear why you are the expert on this topic, and I really was very interesting to hear that history, so thank you so much. I know we have a question from Representative Rauscher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I commend you on all your facts and your numbers and everything that you have that most of us probably will not even begin to remember any of that, and I appreciate your interest in what you're trying to accomplish here also. But I also have a couple questions that, and this goes along with, I guess, with my earlier question that I was wondering about maybe sustainable numbers of caribou, wolves, but I'm also interested because I go to the park. I like watching the sheep. I've got lots of pictures of sheep in the park. And I also like watching the caribou. So I'm wondering, the sustainable numbers of the other animals that are in the park and those in the surrounding areas of the buffer zone. And because we're not really talking about trapping animals in the park, we're talking about possibly not trapping animals in the buffer zone, and the buffer zone buffers up against the park and other lands. So I guess the sustainable numbers of all the other wildlife that are in the area is also a very big concern of mine, that we might be able to get those numbers sometime along with the number of sustainable numbers for wolves. So that's just a, it's not a question, it's just a request. And if you have those, if you have that, I'd be welcome to hear it.
Excellent question, Representative Roucher. And Dr. Steiner, I was going to ask you, at what number do you see population collapse? So maybe you could combine the answers for those two questions.
Sure. Through the chair, Representative Roucher, I appreciate the thought and the question there. And the short answer is there is no specific sustainable population objective. I don't believe for any of the wildlife populations in the park. I would have to defer that to the Park Service biologists, the Denali National Park biology staff, which are very capable, and they are the ones that manage the wildlife in the park primarily. And so they would be the ones, I think, that could give an answer to that. But the other issue here that we need to stay focused on is this bill is about viewability of park wildlife along the park road system for hundreds of thousands of visitors to the park. It's not about the park and preserve wide populations of wolves, bears, etc. It's primarily seeking to enhance and sustain the viewability factor for wolves along the park road, which is, of course, where most visitors view these wolves, are used to anyway. That has dropped off precipitously in the last 7 years since the buffer was eliminated, and I think all the bill is really seeking is to reimpose a substantial, sufficient protected area for wolves so that that viewability rate can recover and restore to levels where people can, tourism businesses can actually book tours to Denali to actually view wolves in the wild. Right now they can't do that legitimately because there's a very, very good chance, a 95% chance that you're not going to see them. But before, it was much higher, almost a half, almost 50-50 chance. So the other thing regarding numbers and wolves is the numbers really aren't necessarily the only criteria with which to judge the health of a wolf population. And I think Director Dale might back us up on this. But the integrity of wolf family groups, the social integrity, is the functional dynamic and the functional objective, I think, to which management should head. That's a difficult thing to manage on a broad scale, such as a game management unit, right? GMU 20 is enormous, you know, the size bigger than many states in the nation. But the family group or pack integrity for these two or three packs along the eastern road system in Denali are basic, and it's probably 20 or 30 animals. Five are taken in the boundary area each year. And so the detriment to those two or three local people that are taking these five animals is not that significant. They'll have a lot of land at the northeast and south to continue doing their wolf take. And as maybe it was Representative Tallarico was talking about the substantial wolf populations to the east of the Nevada there. So obviously there's wolves for people to work on should they choose in a consumptive way. So I think in answer to your question, there is no population objective number, but the numbers aren't that important. What's important is these two or three eastern wolf family groups in the eastern part of Denali near the road system. Two have been decimated by these individual breeder loss takes in the last three or four years, Grant Creek and East Fork. Then East Fork is gone. Grant Creek has repopulated with a few animals in the past few years through immigration and some recruitment. but it's protecting those two or three essential family groups for viewing for these hundreds of thousands of visitors that visit primarily just the short road system in the Northeastern Park. Is that responsive to the question?
Thank you. And Representative Rauscher has a follow-up, so we'll see how close you got.
And thank you. Through the chair, Madam Chair, to the gentleman there on the other end of the phone, and I apologize because I don't remember the name. I think it was Steiner?
Yeah, Dr. Steiner.
Thank you. So, and I understand what you're saying, and I appreciate your value on what this bill can accomplish, but there are some things that I kind of worry about is every action has an exact opposite reaction, or it has a cause and effect, and I just want to make sure that the causes we're affecting are not going to be affected adversely, which is why I think that the numbers may be important. I have this article that, if you allow me to read one paragraph out, it's Kimberly Titus, Alaska Department of Fish and Game, Division of Wildlife Conservation, Juneau, Alaska. And it's a big long distance area, and I really appreciate her work here, but it says in recent history when Governor Tony Knowles was elected in 94, he suspended the then extant ground-based wolf control effort and called for a review of the department's management program. Now, the governor also established three guiding principles that must be met for wolf control to proceed. He directed that control programs must be based on science, sound science, be cost-effective, and broadly accepted by the public. I believe, in my estimation, you might have covered two of those, but I don't think we can overlook the first one. And I think it's just as important to what we're trying to accomplish here through this bill that we understand the significant cause and effect that we could generate. And I'm not so much worried about what's in the park as the areas that are associated with the outside boundary of this this buffer zone and the cause and effect that it's going to create out there as well as in the park. Mm-hmm. And I guess I don't have a question.
I appreciate those comments, Representative Rauscher, and I think we're taking note of that and potentially could seek input from the individual suggested to by Dr. Steiner to reach out to maybe the park biologist. But as a science nerd, I really appreciate the question, and I look forward to when we get some more information on that. Any other questions for Dr. Steiner? Representative Tallarico.
I was just wondering, and Dr. Steiner, I appreciate your testimony today. You had mentioned that the importance of the visitation industry. And it's my understanding that we, of course, set a record last year for visitation, and at least the preliminary numbers that I've been given looks like we may set another record again. Is there any research or number that you would attach to this of what we might be lacking in visitation due to the wolf viewing in Denali?
Representative Tallarico, through the chair, that's a very good question. The answer to that is, I guess, by comparison at Yellowstone, the study down there, they have about a 45 to 85% chance of visitors to Yellowstone. Of course, there's 4 million visitors to Yellowstone. Denali probably can't handle that many visitors, but let's say there's 4 million visitors to Yellowstone, a 45 to 85% chance of seeing wolves. They've done a good job of protecting them there. And that value has been estimated at just a wolf viewing alone of approximately $35 million a year. Now, of course, Denali has a quarter of that visitation, actually a fifth, you know, only about 700,000 visitors a year. But that's been increasing by about, I mean, last year I believe the increase in visitation was almost like 19%. A pretty substantial increase in visitor load in Denali National Park. There is a point at which it might not sustain too much more, but the value of restoring and enhancing and sustaining wolf viewing is certainly in the millions of dollars, if not tens of millions of dollars in Denali. And just keep in mind, though, comparing that to the
actual commercial value of allowing those five wolves to be taken on along the boundary, that's pretty nominal, maybe a few thousand dollars at most, compared to millions of dollars in keeping those few animals alive so that they and their family group can remain intact and den near the road and be seen by visitors in the summer. It's difficult to pin an exact number on it. These are, you know, these resource economists do the best they can, but it's difficult to sort of segregate wolves out of grizzly bears and moose and caribou and sheep and some other things. But I think the totality of the experience there, the visitors have responded to questionnaires saying it's grizzly bears and wolves that really make their trip to Denali. They still, they come, even though they don't see wolves, but then when they go home, they tell people, well, you know, we didn't see wolves. You've got a better chance of seeing them in Yellowstone. If you really want to see wolves, go to Yellowstone. And so we do, we know we're losing some visitation due to this. So that's a circuitous route around your question. I hope it makes sense.
Follow-up, Representative Sellerico.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, thank you, Dr. Steiner. And then I just wondered, you know, Mr. Dale had mentioned that the ungulate population isn't anything near over on the west side of the Indiana River in 20C that it is on the east side of the Indiana River in 20A. Does that have an impact on the wolf population over in that area?
You mean, in, Representative Tallarico, through the chair, you mean on the west side of Indiana?
Yeah, on the west side, over in the Wolf Townships, and I'm pretty familiar with that area. I've spent a reasonable amount of time in there, and the moose and caribou populations there are just minuscule compared to the east side of the Indiana. I just wonder what impact you think that might have on the wolves.
Certainly does. I mean, they're the primary prey, and the wolves generally, particularly in the wintertime, the studies have shown, rely on carrion carcasses, butcher kill of moose and caribou and such. Of course, you're aware of the Denali caribou population depression, and that they are no longer permitted to be taken. But then there's a few other straggling caribou that come through the region, not from the Denali herd, I understand, that may be taken in the area. But certainly, you know, as the primary prey resource for wolves, these carcasses that are no longer, you know, that are not available, are a problem. So, and there were some suggestions earlier by some of the folks that low winter snowfall may be a contributing factor. I looked at that. I ran the numbers of wolf population versus snowfall, and there was no direct correlation. And I believe that's somewhat been debunked now. However, you know, in years of low snowfall, it is more difficult for wolves to bring down live running caribou and moose. There's no question about it. But it's also a factor of the winter kill and the availability of these carcasses for wolves. So it's a complex system. If you live in the area, you know the area better than I do. And you know, everything relates to everything, but the simplest thing, you know, we can't control snowfall. Park managers in the state can't control any natural factors that are affecting this dynamic here. But the very simple thing that the state can control is to reduce the take of these incredibly important few individual wolves along the park boundary to help to sustain and enhance the park wolf viewing resource. So I guess that's sort of the simplicity of the issue to me.
Madam Chair, there have been mention of taking a caribou, but and of course, just so the committee is aware, I do believe that 20C has had a closed caribou season for over 30 years, and there has been on the east side of the Indiana River. Mr. Dale might be able to help me there, but it used to be 3 caribou per resident, and that season there had been no legal hunting seasons in 20C for caribou for over 30 years. So there's no take there.
Thank you. I don't know if were you looking for any response from
No,
that?
No. Okay. I just know it was mentioned. Mm-hmm. You know that something could be taken, and there's
I guess, Madam Chair, if you'd allow me, it's kind of disturbing that even within Denali National Park, where there's no take in what local residents refer to as the hard park,
mm-hmm.
or outside of the park,
mm-hmm.
And particularly on the north side, there still is just no caribou. And for some reason, on the other side of the Nenana River, there is a permit season there. I can't explain it either.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for sharing. I really, really appreciate learning that.
Yeah.
Any other questions for Dr. Steiner? We have three other invited testimony, which is the goal to try to get through them. Mm. And so, of course, those will be back before us. So just as a sharing the plan here for the last few minutes. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair to Mr. Steiner or Dr. Steiner. We're looking at land use before us, and just in consideration of the World Pack that the packs that have been in Denali and studied so much, do you have any other ideas, or I mean, this is an idea question, but do you, other than land, you know, taking land out particularly or for this, do you have any other thoughts on how to enhance that wolf pack?
Representative Johnson, through the chair, I think remember that old adage, do what you can, accept what you can't, and know the difference. In this particular situation, we can't control natural causations for fluctuations in these wildlife populations. It's just beyond our human capabilities. But what we can do is alter our human interaction with these animals in such that at least stopping or prohibiting the take, the very, very limited take, 4 to 5 individual animals taken each year along the boundary. Those were Fish and Game's estimates provided a year or two ago. And reducing that take is probably the number one thing we can do. Wolf family groups denning near roads, near the park road, the Park Service has been very capable at keeping people away from those areas to protect the integrity and the functionality of these den sites. They've done a good job at that. That is certainly something that should be done. But if they do that right, if these 2 or 3 wolf family groups in the northeastern area of Denali begin to recover, another 1 or 2 forms, and this does happen, and they begin denning again near the park road, you're going to have visitor viewing success back up at 40 or 50 or even higher percent every year, and people are going to talk about it. It's going to be a hot buzz for Denali National Park for the first time in a long time. So, you know, reducing the take along the boundary and protecting the den sites from disturbance are probably the 2 biggest things that can be done. And I also mentioned Representative Tallarico's observations about high wolf densities east of the Nenana are encouraging in that they could provide a reservoir to repopulate some of this eastern Denali wolf population potentially. So we'll just have to see how that works.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for your testimony, Dr. Steiner. I'm looking at a map of Yellowstone National Park, and I see that it straddles 3 states. The bulk of it is in Wyoming, but there's a huge piece in Montana and a significant piece in Idaho. I wonder if you can tell us how the National Park Service works with those 3 states to protect their wolves. And I don't expect an answer right now, but if you could point us in the right direction. And number 2, should this buffer zone be granted, what would keep the wolves from venturing further east if trappers chose to go to the now newer boundary, however many miles to the east of and the south of where it is now, and doing the same thing that they have done to lure the wolves to the boundaries of the park and capturing them there?
Representative Drummond, through the chair, they're both very good questions. First, on Yellowstone, I don't know the relationship between the national park and the 3 states. I will point out, however, that the governor of Montana last year unilaterally established a 300,000-acre bison conservation area along the boundary of Yellowstone. The problem Yellowstone has with bison is the exact reverse that we have in Denali with wolves, and that is Yellowstone has too many bison, right? But this bison conservation area resolved a number of issues, but it's a model for how a state can administratively cooperate with a national park that, from which they derive a great deal of revenue. I will have to look into the other issue regarding wolves. Of course, wolves were reintroduced there. It was a controversial issue. One of the papers I submitted to you as a supporting document is a study by Dr. Loomis from Colorado State University, a resource economist that discusses the Yellowstone situation versus the Denali situation and the values in both areas. So I would encourage you to late night reading, perhaps have a look at that paper. On the other issue, there is no perfect boundary, as you know. The boundary drawn in this bill, which is the blue area and contiguous with what we had proposed to the governor as the Denali Wildlife Conservation Area, the 500 square mile or 340,000 acre protected area for wolves, would encompass perhaps 90 or 90, possibly even 95% of the forays, of the wolf forays from Denali, from the eastern edge of Denali. It wouldn't get them all. So Denali wolves would still be susceptible to harvest outside of even that blue, even this Denali wolf buffer. There's no question about that. Some leave the park and just head over to Yukon Charlie. So there's no way to provide 100% protection, but I think there has to be some reasonable accommodation. You can't draw the line all the way over to the Canadian border. And I think this is the reasonable boundary. This is the one proposed by Dr. Gordon Haber, who is a colleague of mine. He proposed it, I think, in 2002. And the Anchorage Fish and Game Advisory Committee proposed this exact same boundary to the Board of Game in 2010. And it's the exact same boundary that a number of us are proposing to the governor for them to consider as well. So I think it's a legitimate compromise between wolf forays from the park, protecting as many as possible, maybe 90% of that, but still being a reasonable boundary. And the other thing about the boundary is it's very easy to see. There's some Representative Tallarico would know the boundary probably better than any of us, but there's these mountain peaks along there, Dora Peak, et cetera, that are easy for people to see, even if they don't have a GPS unit. So it would be easy from an enforcement and public use standpoint.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Steiner. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Steiner. We're going to try to go to Vic Van Ballenberg before we run out of time this afternoon. So, Vic, if you're available, if you could please put yourself on the record and provide your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am Vic Van Ballenberg. I live in Anchorage. I'm a wildlife biologist, and I served on the Board of Game three times between 1985 and 2002. In 2002, I was a Board of Game member when it created a buffer adjacent to the northeast corner of Denali National Park to preserve or to protect park wolves from hunting and trapping when they ventured out of the park during winter. Several times in previous years, wolf packs were severely reduced or eliminated in this area by legal and illegal hunting and trapping, thereby reducing the opportunity of park visitors to experience wolves. The board received hundreds of written comments along with oral testimony strongly urging creation of this buffer. We thoroughly debated the proposal, amended, and passed it. Previous boards created other buffers starting in 1992, including in the area north of the park along the Stampede Trail. But during 2002 to 2010, wolves continued to be taken, packs were disrupted, and viewing opportunities were reduced. It was generally recognized that the buffers were too small. In 2010, the National Park Service submitted a proposal to enlarge the northern buffer has been conservation organizations with additional proposals. Despite strong public support, the board not only rejected these proposals, but rescinded the existing buffers. And as an aside, the Nanana Canyon buffer that we created in 2002 did not have a sunset clause. The board rescinded it with the vote. During the past 6 years, with no buffers in place, the problems have worsened, with sightings of wolves along the park's road dropping greatly. Feedbacks were often disrupted, including the apparent elimination of an internationally known pack, the 77-year history of research, and one of the most frequently seen packs in the park. Despite this, the game board rejected several petitions requesting emergency closures to protect the few remaining wolves. After adopting a six-year moratorium in 2010 on new buffer proposals, this month the game board will finally again consider the issue of creating buffers. We have no reason to believe that the board will depart from its position of the last 6 years and act to create a buffer. Even if it does, the buffer would likely be too small, as it was in the past, and future boards could rescind it. There are multiple biological, sociological, and economic reasons why a buffer is needed, and you've heard a bunch of them here today. The supporting documents for HB 105 outline numerous justifications. You will certainly hear others testify in detail about them. And public support for a buffer has been very strong every time the issue was before the game board during the past decade, yet the board refused to act. It is time to finally resolve this issue with a permanent solution by moving from the game board arena to the legislature. HB 105 will accomplish that. I strongly support this bill and urge the committee members to fully endorse it and to work hard for its passage. I'd like to briefly add one thing here at the end, and that is my own personal experiences as an ordinary citizen of Alaska who desired to see wolves in a state where we pride ourselves on our diverse wildlife resource. In Alaska, we're fortunate to have a diversity of wild animals not found in most other states. Grizzly bears, polar bears, muskoxen, caribou, and wolves. But those of us interested in seeing or hearing wild wolves have very few opportunities to do so. My own experiences over the past 42 years illustrate this. During the pipeline years, I commuted every week between Anchorage and Glen Allen, about 50,000 miles total on the Glen Highway during 3 years. During 10 years in Fairbanks, I drove often to Denali Park. I often drove the Denali Highway, 135 miles of gravel road through wild country. In Anchorage, I drove hundreds of times to Denali, and there were trips to Valdez, Tok, and Homer. In all this travel, I saw one wolf along the road system. Why only one? Simply because hunting, trapping, and wolf control programs near the road system remove many wolves and make them fear people. For the past 36 years, I've studied moose in Denali National Park. Each year, I've driven the paved road in the park numerous times. During those years when the wolf pack there was not disrupted by hunting and trapping outside the park, I saw wolves near the road, some years dozens of sightings. Paved road in Denali can be driven without a permit anytime the park is open. It is the only place where those interested in seeing or hearing wolves can drive to and stand a reasonable chance of success, but only if those wolves are protected when they leave the park. HB 105 can provide what the Board of Game will not do, preserve the unique opportunity to experience wolves in one small place that people can access. I believe most Alaskans support this concept. With your support, it will happen. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this important bill.
Thank Thank you, Mr. Ballenberg. I hope you'll be available for our next hearing because we're out of time, unfortunately, today, and we won't be able to take your questions. I want to announce that Representative Birch and Representative Westlake joined the meeting about 1:15. They were just a few minutes late, and I don't think I made sure that was on the record. And just as a review for next week, we will start hearing House Bill 111 on Monday at 1 p.m. Then on Wednesday, we have a joint hearing with the Senate Resources Committee on the mining update, so that will be a really important meeting. And then we'll be hearing this bill and the trapping bill at 1 p.m. And then we'll, at 6 p.m., take up House Bill 6, the Jonesville public use area of Representative Rauschers, to complete public testimony on that. And then we'll go back to the oil and gas bill. So we'll try to get through a few of those so they don't linger out here. I know there was an individual, Sylvia Panzarella from Anchorage, that had requested to testify first, if possible. My sincere apologies that we didn't get to the public testimony. Please let our offices know if you're not available the next time this bill is coming up, and we will read your testimony on the record. If there's no further business to come before the committee, seeing none, we're going to adjourn at 3:02 p.m.